Okay, I believe that it is time for us to get started with our study tonight. So, Curtis, would you lead us in a word of prayer, please? All right, what city are we in? And that's in the Bible study, not literally or something, but what city are we in? Corinth. That's very good. Corinth. I had two of my friends, two members of the church at Eastside, call me this afternoon, and they were wanting to be here, planning to be here. And I don't know if they made it or not. One of them drives he makes a living driving RV vehicles, delivering them. And he's driving a 40-foot RV with a car behind it. And so he was asking about parking and everything. So anyway, I haven't seen him. So I hope they will make it. I really do. But I'd like to see them. All right, so we're in Corinth, and look in chapter 18 and verse 11, and what is the length of time mentioned there? See, a year and a half, a year and 6 months, and then in verse 18, after the episode with Gallio, Paul having tarried after this, how many days? Yet many days. And we don't know really whether that's to be added to the 18 months or whether it is a part of the 18 months. It could certainly be added to it. I mean, we really don't know. But we've made the point that that would press it close to the 54, which would have been the death of Claudius. And do you remember? I know I've told you. So the question is, do you remember? What is the emperor that follows Claudius? Nero. That's right. Nero. That's right. Wow. Think about that. So Nero will actually be emperor the rest of Paul's life. And likely, if we can trust tradition at all, likely he was the emperor the rest of Peter's life. And both of those men probably met martyrdom under his rule. So, isn't that something? Nero. Nero. All right, so the story, well, let me just ask you a thing or two. You know, you can begin with verse 5. When Paul got there, it was not long before Paul and Silas, or before Silas and Timothy came down from Macedonia. And so Paul was constrained to preach and urge the Jews. He really put pressure on the Jews. And so at that point, what did they do? What did the Jews make them feel? Unwelcome. So what did they do with regard to the synagogue? They left the synagogue. And where did they move? Next door. I like that. Next door, the house of a man named Titus Justus. And so he worked there, And what did the Lord tell him in verse 9? Don't be afraid. And what else? I have much people in this city. Isn't that something? I have much people. All right, so then we have the story of Gallio. And remember that what we need to understand is in regard to 1 Corinthians, which we will study a little bit later. What was the constitution of the church there at Corinth? Were there Jews in it? Were there Gentiles in it? Yes, yes. And that's one of the things that makes the epistle of 1 Corinthians so interesting. And some of the things about, you know, Paul talking about rights and how you should regard rights, your rights, one another's, and there were some that would say, eating meats offered to idols, that doesn't bother me at all. And so I've always thought, well, I don't want to get into that too much, but I've always thought that I can make a case for a Jew who said, well, knowing what I know no idols, anything, and so I can eat the meat, you know, even though it's sacrificed to an idol. An idol is nothing to me. But I can also make a case for that being a Gentile who has been converted, and he says, I've been converted, I have left all that stuff, and now I can eat the meat sacrificed to an idol without it being to an idol at all. So, you know, either one. But we know that there were Jews and Gentiles both in that church. That is a clear fact. All right, what about this thing about the Jews bringing Paul and charging him, making all kinds of charges against him? Did Paul make his defense before Gallio? Why did he not? He didn't need to. Gallio said, oh, you Jews. I like that. Oh, you Jews. If it were a matter of wicked villainy, reason would that I should bear with you. But if there are questions about words and names and your own law, look to it yourselves. I'm not minded to be a judge of these matters. So when they didn't clear out fast enough, and that was exactly what happened, they kept, but wait a minute. So what did he do with them? He drove them out. And so the lictors, it wasn't just the crowd, it was the lictors that were his men. They were the ones that beat Sosthenes. Sosthenes. Now what was Sosthenes? The ruler of the synagogue. Have you looked at 1 Corinthians 1:1? You looked at 1 Corinthians 1:1? Huh? What does 1 Corinthians 1:1 say? You want to read it? All right. Just read it, please.
Paul called the apostle of Jesus Christ.
All right. Now notice he says Sosthenes. Now that's the same name. But if Sosthenes had been from Corinth and was a member of the church, then his habit would have caused him to say, Sosthenes, your brother. But when he says, our brother, then really what he's saying essentially is that, no, this is a different Sosthenes. And it was almost certainly a different Sosthenes. But anyway, this Sosthenes, ruler of the synagogue, and so the officials really beat him. And, you know, clear out. When he says clear out, that means clear out. Is there anything you don't understand about clearing out? So it was explained. It was explained so that they understood it, you know. All right, let's look now, going a little further here, 18 through 21. Okay, Scott, how about reading verses 18 through 21.
And Paul, having
Now, before we get into any detail, are you impressed with the reception by the Jews there? What did they want him to do? Stay with them longer. I mean, that's a pretty good sign. All right, so what he's doing here, what was that seaport? You see it? You see it up there? So there was the seaport of Cenchrea. And so he took his leave of the brethren, sailed thence for Syria, and with him Priscilla and Aquila. Now then, your text, that part about the vow and everything, I want you to read that, just that part again. All right. Read the verse before and that verse. I think your verse makes it pretty clear. Come on in. I've been telling everybody we were expecting you guys. We are really glad to have them. Hey, good to have you. Welcome. Glad you made it. So, Jerry Baker is the one on my right. Harold Holt is the one on my left. So I want you to get acquainted with him. I preached up at Eastside for 14 years, lived up there for 15 years, and so I had an opportunity to preach to them a good bit. So I enjoyed my time up there very, very much. All right, we're in 1 Corinthians, and we're looking here at 1 Corinthians 18 and verse 18. What? Well, I'm sorry, Acts 18. Yeah, Acts 18. Acts 18 and verse 18. And Paul, having tarried after this yet many days, took his leave of the brethren and sailed thence for Syria. Now, the American Standard says, and with him Priscilla and Aquila, having shorn his head in Cenchrea. What does someone have a little variant reading that would differ from that? How about you, Nathan? You have any? How does yours read? All right, read a little bit earlier, because I'm going to get the whole context. All right. Now, notice, excuse me for interrupting, but do you notice when he says Priscilla and Aquila, and then what is the pronoun that follows that? He. He. See? So, I'm going to just go ahead and tell you that the Greek makes it clear that it was not Paul who had shorn his hair, but it was Aquila who had shorn his hair. So, but it really doesn't matter. The shearing of the hair here was not a Nazarite vow, because when the hair was shorn with a Nazarite vow, that ended the vow. See, that ended the vow. This was not that kind of a vow. So, and do you remember from previous studies that when Paul got to Jerusalem at the end of the third journey, we have that journey yet to study. When he got there in Jerusalem, remember he took the offering and everything, took it to Jerusalem. And one of the things that James told him, he says, now, brother, you see how many Jews there are that are believers and everything like that. And they've heard that you are trying to get people to not keep the law and things like that. Well, do we understand that what Paul was concerned is that the law not be bound on Gentiles. He did not object to Jews keeping the traditions of the law. And do you remember what he did with Timothy? So he had him circumcised. He circumcised him. What about Titus, who was just a Gentile? In other words, Timothy had a mother who was a believer, a Jewess. He had a father who was a Greek. So there was a mix there that would have caused a problem. But Titus was a Gentile. There was no mixed blood at all there. So remember what he said when they got to Jerusalem? That there were those who insisted that Titus be circumcised. And so what did Paul do with that occasion? No way. No way. See that? So then it went. So I go back to the idea. When he got to Jerusalem, and James was talking about this, he says, now, we have four men under a vow, and we want you to be at charges for them. Now, that was a Nazarite vow. It was coming to an end. It was brought to an end. So he asked Paul if he would be at charges and kind of responsible for them as they went through the ceremonies. And so Paul said, yeah, sure. You see that? Now, for him to do that would be perfectly acceptable in, you know, from his standpoint, because he would be regarding that as keeping a tradition of the law, not binding it on a Gentile, okay? So he had no problem with that. So whether it was Paul who had shorn his head or whether it was Aquila who had shorn his head, Paul wouldn't have had a problem with that at all. Okay, so whichever one it was. But I believe that the Greek definitely points to Aquila. And some translations maybe bring that out, but anyway, that's the fact. That's the situation. So we will now pass over that, because that's not the important thing here. He came to Ephesus. All right, let's look at Ephesus. Now, what is the shape? What is the shape here? I heard somebody say it. Horseshoe. Right? All right, now, which leg of the horseshoe is Ephesus on? Is it on the right leg or is it on the left leg? See, right there it is. So, here's the horseshoe. There's Ephesus. Here is Corinth, Synchre. So what they do here is they just sail right over here to Ephesus. So that was maybe 300 or 400 miles across the Aegean Sea. So they just go over there. Now Paul is on his way back to Jerusalem, and he's just, you know, he usually stops in there and kind of checks in a little bit. Sees the brethren. So, but they came to Ephesus, and he left them there. In other words, they're going to take care of themselves at Ephesus. Meanwhile, he goes into the synagogue. Had Paul had any interest in going to Ephesus before? Remember when he was coming through the upper country there? That he had the idea of let's go down into Asia, and what the Holy Spirit say? No, well let's go up over in Bithynia, and what the Holy Spirit say? No, so Asia was where Ephesus was located. So Ephesus was in Asia, and I know Paul, as a preacher of the gospel, had thought about Ephesus. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that when he gets over there, he just promptly doesn't, you know, I mean, all right, Priscilla and Aquila, you take care of yourselves now. You're going to be all right. Okay, I'm going to go in here to the synagogue. So he goes in there to test the waters. And so he reasoned with the Jews. Now let's think about this. Let's go back to 1 Corinthians 18 and verse 4. Austin, can you read that, 18:4? I'm telling you what. Acts 18:4. I don't know what's going on. You all are in a conspiracy. All right, 18:4. I'm sorry, I'm just messing up. But in verse 19, you know why I had you read that? Look now in verse 19. Read that one too. That's 18:19. See, he's doing the same thing. So what he's doing here is he is testing the waters. Now, after he had preached there at Corinth for a little while, then when Silas and Timothy came down to join him, then remember he began to press his case. Well, he doesn't press his case here. All he's doing here is just testing the waters. And so what impression does he get there in verse 20? What do the Jews ask him to do? Boy, wouldn't that be music to your ears? Stay longer. He says, no, I will return again unto you if God will. So that's another example of if God wills. We both do this or that. So if God wills. So he promised them, but he could not guarantee it. So taking his leave of them, I will return again unto you if God will. And so he set sail from Ephesus. All right, so Ephesus, you see, Ephesus is located here, and the era and all that obscures the fact that at that time you could actually sail up to Ephesus. You can't actually sail up to Ephesus now. The harbor is silted in and everything. You can't sail up to it. You can just get close. So he sailed from Ephesus and went over here, and I told Donald that this map would be all right. Well, it's not all right from the standpoint of I need to be able to show you the rest of it. In verse 22, when he had landed at Caesarea, but you know enough about the Bible geography, don't you? What coast was Caesarea on? Was it on the coast of Asia? Was it on the coast of Palestine? Yes, it was on the coast of Palestine. Do you remember what that mountain is that Adam has been showing the children? Up that side there, you go up that side, and there's just a little hump. It's about the only hump all the way up. What is that mountain? Mount Carmel. And so you go just down from Mount Carmel just a little bit, and that's Caesarea. Caesarea. Caesarea covered about 3,000 acres. It was a large city. And that is one of the cities that I was able to visit when we went over to that land. And one of the things I was impressed about was that when you look at Caesarea, man, it's a waterfront. I mean, it was made for ships to come in and load and unload. It was just made for that. So it was interesting to me to see Caesarea. And they had built an artificial breakwater to guard the harbor there against the waves and everything like that. So he went up He landed at Caesarea and then went up and saluted the church. Went up and saluted the church. Now, Jimmy, what church do you think that is? Well, it's the Lord's church. You want to be more specific? It was the church in Jerusalem. Yeah, it was the church in Jerusalem. So he went up and saluted the church in Jerusalem. So he stops at Caesarea. If he had not gone to Caesarea, what other place might he have gone over there on that larger coast? Antioch. You know, that's where he set out from again and again. So the fact that he went to Caesarea almost suggested that he ought. Yeah. It was considerably south. Yeah. What'd you say? Oh, okay. All I was saying was that if he was going to sail to the coast there, he could have just come down and, well, let me just show you. He could have, as he came down here, he could have come, and instead of going down like this, he could have gone over like that, see, and could have gone straight to Antioch. But the very fact that he goes to Caesarea means that he is planning to go up and salute the church at Jerusalem. So he goes up and salutes the church at Jerusalem. And what does it say about how much time he spent there? Doesn't say anything about how much time he spent there. He went up and saluted the church. And then what did he do? He went down to Antioch. What Antioch is this? Antioch of Syria. That's right. What was the other Antioch that we've talked about? Pisidia. Antioch of Pisidia. This is Antioch of Syria. So he went up there and visited the... Well, he went to the church. Then he went down to Antioch. Now, down to Antioch. Now, isn't Antioch of Syria north of Jerusalem? Yes, it is. But the point is that they didn't always follow, you know, north is up. When you left Jerusalem, it was very common to speak of going down. So, leaving Jerusalem, they would have gone down. He would have gone down. By the way, who is spoken of as being with Paul on this particular leg of his journey? Not a soul. There's nobody associated with him. So, he went down to Antioch. So, he went north, but he went down. Okay? So, when he left Jerusalem, he went down. Yes, did you have... Okay.
So he told the folks in
Well, Ephesus was where he went in the synagogue and spoke with them.
Right, but he said, I have to go to speak.
Now, wait a minute. No, wait just a minute. All right, going back there, yeah, this is 1920. This is it's later that you're thinking about. On all right, ask your question. Well, see, I'm having trouble spotting that feast in 21. 1821. What? How does yours read? Okay. Then that's just a different reading. Okay. There's a different text there, and so it may be if we really checked into it, it may be because later on on the third journey, he does make that point. So they may be saying the same thing because see he. Took a short trip on the third journey over to Ephesus, and he was on his way to Jerusalem. So In fact, on that third journey, at the end of that third journey, he goes up around that horseshoe. He goes to Troas. And as he comes down to Ephesus, but he doesn't actually talk to the, he doesn't go to the church there. He goes down to Miletus, remember, and calls the elders to meet him there. And but on that journey, he's explaining that he's in a hurry. So I don't know the explanation for the difference, but I'm guessing that it might be that they imported that, you know, from that account. I really don't know. I'll put it this way. Probably it was about March the 15th when he left, Corinth, sailed over, because it was not safe to sail before March the 15th. So it was getting close to the Passover. So that would have been the feast that time. In the American Standard, how many others have a reference to the feast there in 1821? You have several of you? Okay, so several of you do have a reference to that. I'm not counting heads. I'm just kind of wondering how many do have that. Okay. All right, what is your New King James? Okay. So what does yours say? Okay. Well, what version do you have? New American Standard. Okay. All right. So that would be the feast. That would be the feast. Yeah. Okay. So I like having these different versions. We can kind of establish a little bit of something there. And if you wanted to, you could look it up, and there would be explanations for that. And it's a minor variation. And the reason for it may have to do with the fact that later on there is a more reliable, in other words, so far as the manuscripts are concerned, a more reliable occasion when he said, I'm heading to Jerusalem, and so I'm in a hurry, and so on. And they may have imported that. Some scribe, some copyist may have done that, but I don't know. I have not actually checked into that. All right, so he goes to Antioch of Syria. All right, verse 23. Let's see, Timmy, how about reading that? All right, now as we think about this, we want to give just a little bit of attention to the fact that there were three men that set out with Paul, ultimately. He set out with Silas, they picked up Timothy, and then they picked up Luke. Now, the fact that neither one of them is with him on this journey, see that? So, wonder what Timothy did? Well, I don't know. Wonder what Silas did? I don't know. I do know what Luke did. He stayed at Philippi. We know he stayed at Philippi. But I rather think, I mean, they did something. Silas did not stay at Corinth. Timothy did not stay at Corinth. But Silas had come from Jerusalem, and that would have been a considerable time before. So probably he had to see people, he had to go back and renew acquaintance. Timothy would have had to do that. I don't know what they did, but they were not with Paul, and they were not with him as he set out on this third journey. See, this is the beginning of the third journey here. Everybody see that? So in verse 23, having spent some time there, he departed and went through the region of Galatia and Phrygia. Is that the way you got it? Now, let me see. All right. This is maybe all right. There's Antioch. I think there is Antioch right there. All right, see, there's Phrygia. Now, this would have been southern Galatia. All right, now take note of that. That would have been southern Galatia, and there's Phrygia. And so what does it say? It says he went through Galatia and Phrygia. Okay, so that would have fit, right? So he went through Galatia and Phrygia, wherever that was. Yeah, there it is. So he went through that territory, and establishing all the disciples. Meanwhile, back at the ranch. Meanwhile, what's been going on? Mike, can you read that? Why don't you read 24 through 28 there? All right, so this man is Apollos, not Apollo. Apollo, the Greek god. This is Apollos. Where was he born? Alexandria. Alexandria what? Egypt, that's right. Alexandria, Egypt. What else is he called, Mike? What is he called there? A certain Jew named Apollos, an Alexandrian by race, and what else? An eloquent man. An eloquent, that word means he was trained in rhetoric. He was able to really take an argument, and, I mean, he'd go up one side, down the other side. He was trained in making an argument. He was trained in making an argument. Now, wonder what religious background he came from. Yeah, that's right. He was Jewish. So he came over there, and look at the qualities of this man. First thing, in verse 25, what is it? Well, one other thing. He was a Jew, Apollos, named Apollos, an Alexandrian by race, an eloquent man trained in rhetoric. Came to Ephesus, and what else does it say? Mighty in the Scriptures. Now that means he knew the Scriptures. He knew the Scriptures. And it's really interesting to me to think about that, because he would not have had a Bible. He would not have even had an Old Testament, a single Old Testament. He would have gotten all of his reading from scrolls. So, he would have had occasion in a synagogue there in Alexandria to read many of the scrolls in Hebrew, and I'm assuming that, you know, how he was mighty in the Scriptures. How had he made himself mighty in the Scriptures? He had read a lot. He had studied a lot. He had committed it to memory. They didn't have all these wonderful devices back then doing stuff. So they used the old-fashioned memory. And it is amazing what some of these people were able to accomplish. He was mighty in the Scriptures. What else does it say about him? Verse 25. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord. What other quality did he have? Fervent in spirit. What does that mean? He was devoted, enthused about it, fervent in spirit. What he believed, he really believed. And what he believed, he felt like he should teach. So, being fervent in spirit, he spake and taught accurately. That's what I would have expected of him, accurately. The things concerning Jesus, but there was a limitation. What was the limitation? He knew only the baptism of John. And from what we read about him, I think that he did not know the rest of the story. He really didn't know the rest of the story. So what did he know? Well, I think that he would have known that John had come baptizing, that John had preached a baptism of repentance, because one of the things he did while he was there was he baptized some men. See? So I think he did that, and I'm not exactly sure how much he knew, but... let me see. All right, look at this point. This man had been instructed in the way of the Lord, so he knew something about Jesus. How much did he know? Did he know that John had said, "This is the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of the world," and things like that? You know, so it could have been things like that. He knew he was instructed in the way of the Lord, but there were some very important things that apparently he didn't know. But when he knew, he began to speak boldly.